I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, HYPERTHETICAL.
We did the first scene, which was great. We did the next scene, they were great. We move on to this very emotional scene, which may or may not make it into the pilot, which is part of this, is like this big, beautiful emotional scene. It's possible that it actually got cut. So that's just part of it. But we move into this big emotional scene where the boys are leaving. And I do it once. She goes, great. Okay, so I can only imagine how angry she would be at them for leaving her. And I was like, oh, interesting note. I go and do it again. She goes, she's never mean to her children. And I was like, angry, not mean. Okay.
Yeah.
I do it one more time. And I knew that I didn't quite get it. And so we cut and I said, that wasn't it, was it? And she's like, yeah, no, it wasn't quite it.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. If this is your first time tuning in, hello and welcome. This is the show where I speak to fellow actors about their journey in the industry, and I make them share some bad audition stories with me. If you're not subscribed, make sure to hit that subscribe button right now. You can also go to our show notes and check out the links down there, all of our social medias down there. And if you want to see the full interview on tape, on video recording, I guess, not tape. We don't use that anymore. Check out our Patreon, which is in the show notes. Just like last week, this episode has been pre-recorded a few weeks ago. So this was, I believe, March 3rd when we had this conversation, which was very exciting because it was the day that Daisy Jones and the Six came out. And we're talking to Lynn Downey, who is in Daisy Jones and the Six. Lynn plays Marlene, the mom of our favorite rocker boys, and we had such a great conversation about creating space for yourself as an actor, really learning how to balance, you know, your life and your art, and it was a really great emotional and, like, full conversation. So I hope that every actor who's listening to this, or any artist or anybody who's in a creative-ish field, has a benefit from this episode, because I certainly did when we were talking. So here's my conversation with Lynn Downey. And welcome to the show, Lynn!
Hello! Jillian, how are you?
I'm so good. I'm so excited to talk to you today. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing amazing. Today is March 3rd, which means that Daisy Jones and the Six is dropping on Amazon today. I mean, literally, it's like the day of the show, y'all. And so it's been a 3-year journey just for me in this process. And so the fact that they were building this show and building this story for, like, I think at least 2 years, even before they got to casting. And of course, Taylor Jenkins Reid's amazing book was the years before. So it's years in the making. It's a pretty special thing. Yeah,
that's amazing. I mean, usually I like to start with going back, but since we're here, let's talk about Daisy Jones and the Six for a second. I remember getting that book in my, I used to be in the Book of the Month Club. I don't know if you've seen that, like, book service.
Yeah.
And one of the books I was sent was Daisy Jones and the Six. And so when they announced the series, I was like, well, yeah, that makes total sense. Like, this literally felt like a TV show.
Right.
And you joined the cast as Marlene. What was it like to work on something so world building?
Oh, well, I have to say the just getting an audition that had such a richness to it to begin with. Like, I think it's the first thing I took a book and adapted it into a play in 2014. And so that was a book before it became something that I got to work on. But this was the first, like, official, you know, thing that had been a book before. And so it was so special to be like, I'm going to read this. Where's my character? And then, oh my gosh, there's that character, right? I don't think I actually got the book until I had booked the role, but just knowing
probably
that it
smart.
Came. Yeah. We want to not attach too quickly. And also the fast turnaround, right? Like with auditions, you just never know what's the one that's going to be the one. And I got the audition and I just felt that the script was so rich. That's something I've always thought is Scott Neustadler and Michael H. Weber, the way that they translated Taylor Jenkins Reid's work into actable choices. Like, there was this one line in the action around the scene where the boys are leaving. So I play Marlene, the mom of the guys that start the band, the Six.
Yeah.
And the scene that they, like, go off to Hollywood, they wrote this line in a dialogue of in part of the dialogue. It said, God, they love this woman. God, they love this woman, about their mom. And I was like, I know who she is. Like, it was like that one little, it gives me chills just to think about it, but that one little piece, you could just tell the care that went into it. So it's been so special to be a part of this. And like, I auditioned February 2020.
Wow. Right before the world shut down.
Exactly. And I'd love to talk about the details of that audition process because it was so special. But, you know, piece of my story is I was at Paramount Lot being fitted the day before shutdown.
No.
Yeah, for whatever reason, Denise Wingate, who is the incredible costume designer, talk about world building. She's incredible.
Yeah.
She chose to bring me in first because I had been cast and I was ready to go. And so we spent this, like, very odd, very bonding moment. Like, do you think they'd, like, shut down Paramount? I don't think they would do that. Like, and so we did my fitting and took all these pictures, and that was, you know, March 2020. And then it wasn't until September 2021 that I was back getting refitted. And they were like, ah! Like, we had this bonding moment, like, oh my gosh, that was the day before shutdown. So it was really crazy.
Oh my Lord. That is wild.
Yeah.
But isn't it funny to think about it? Back then, it was one of those things. I know I was on a production at the time too. And we were all like, well, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. It's fine. Right. Like, it's not going to take long. And then it was just like, no, you're not going back to work for a long time. Yep. Buckle up.
And I have to say, like, one of the pieces that was really special with just, I think, the way that I was able to process this, like, I can totally see a couple years ago myself being so devastated, like, oh my gosh, my first recurring role, like, this big, beautiful story, like, oh no, we're putting it on pause. But really what happened for me was I was like, oh good, I have a job waiting for me at the end of this.
Yeah.
And holding that thought was so special because very rarely in our acting careers do we're like, oh yeah, no, I have a job coming up, you know. We hope for that more and more. But that's really what kind of, it got me through quarantine in such a beautiful way of like, nope, plenty of time to just sink into this character. And like,
hey, I can do more research now. I did.
I really did. I decided to, part of my, like, part of the thing that's really helpful for me is the getting into the character's backstory and like journaling. It's really writing. That's always been like my main hook is like, who are they? Where they come from? And with this role, I was inspired to like write a letter to my sons the way that Marlene would like write a letter to them with, as they were going, as part of like, who is she? What's their, you know, experience? And honestly, Jillian, I did a very big, bold thing, which is I just decided that I was going to give those letters to Sam Claflin and Will Harrison, who play my sons. So,
and what was their reaction? What did they do?
And I knew it was kind of like, it could be very, it could be perceived in any way. Like maybe it's a little extra, maybe it's whatever, but the truth is it came from my heart. And the cool part was I actually ended up getting to be on set the very first day of filming because primarily Marlene is in the pilot. And so everyone was like, oh my gosh, we're doing this. We're back. It's been so long. The coolest thing for the guys that are in the band is that they then had a year and a half to play their instruments and to become a real band.
So you know, cool.
Talk about blessing in disguise, right? So
no
everyone
kidding.
Is so
yeah,
excited
it's like
to be there.
Real now.
Yeah, it's so real. They play all their instruments. They sing all the roles. They just released the album Aurora yesterday. Like there's so much interconnection. But you know, it was one of those things where I'd written these notes and I was like, I just met these guys. Like, how am I going to do this? And I just sat with it and I was like, you know what? It's been a year and a half. And why not?
Do it.
Right?
Yes.
And it speaks so much to who they are as artists that they were just like willing to receive. But I was like, okay, boys, like your mom wrote you a note. And they were like, are you serious? And I was like, look, why do we do this if not to make believe? Right? Like, why do we do this if not to just put our whole heart and soul into it? And I, you know, I didn't hear back from them if they like read it, but like, it was a huge part of how I needed to build for myself how these boys matter to her. Mm-hmm. And Marlene was really like the loving mom. Like these, they had nothing. They were so poor. They just scraped together, but they had love. Whereas Daisy Jones came from affluence and status, but her parents were awful to her. And so it's really this story around, that love like, is the richness, you know?
Yeah, it's like the sociology of the characters really plays into the entirety of the story.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a chance that my really beautiful goodbye scene maybe is shorter than it was. You know, there's a chance that it might not have made it into the cut. We'll see. I have yet to see it. However, there's a scene where I send them on their way, and that was part of the audition that I did.
Yeah.
And it was just this beautiful time to just really send them out with love. And she says, someday you are going to buy me a house.
Oh.
And then we flash forward to episode 9, where I got to film in May of 2022.
Wow.
In New Orleans, like all this craziness, you know, that time, and they've bought her a house and they have a party at this house. Right. So it's this beautiful arch of like the love that she had and the belief that she had in them created their, you know, their gift back to her. So it's a really beautiful story and such a small part of their, you know, the big journey of the band, but so special to get to be a part of.
I am so excited to binge it. I really can't wait. It's been, I mean, everybody's been talking about how it's going to be one of the bigger shows of the year, and I'm so excited to see it. But now that we've talked about that, let's go all the way back to the very beginning of your career and ask you, why did you want to become an actor?
That's such a sweet, special question. I think everyone's answer is so nuanced. You know, there's going to be themes that are the same for a lot of different people. But one of the things that I said early on was, I don't believe in reincarnation and one life is not good enough.
And I am quoting that for the rest of my life. Yes.
Now maybe I do believe in reincarnation. I don't know. But at the time, you know, it was like, I really, but just the human experience is so fascinating to me. And especially coming from kind of a conservative background, a small town in Indiana, like I wanted to feel all the big feelings. I wanted to experience all the different kinds of relationships that people had, and doing it in a story is such a safe way. Like, maybe you don't want to be a heroin addict, but maybe you want to feel like what that would feel like.
Right.
You know?
It's like, I don't actually want to go to school to be a doctor, but I would love to play one.
Yes, exactly. Like, I want to feel the feelings and experience that the fullness of human life, you know? And so that's really what got me started. And also, I just really loved pretty dresses. So it was like, oh, where can I have more pretty dresses?
Perfect combo there.
Yeah.
That's the combo. Yeah. What was your journey into finding your first like steps in the pool of acting? How did you wade through it?
I think my best friend growing up was very dramatic, as I was also, but you know, we did after school pro. I mean, I think we were four or five, and we did a little like play where we were mermaids and our moms did the costumes, and you know, we got into one pair of women's hose and we're like hopping around the stage. So I had done a lot of, you know, little plays as just extracurricular activities as a younger person. And my theater department in my high school was actually really excellent. Of the people that were in my cohort, Nick Mills is an actor in New York who was an understudy for The Humans, which won the Tony. Ellen Adair is one of my dearest best friends. She was on the second season of The Sinner. She's been on Billions. She did a Homeland. She's working a really incredible, she's going to pop in like 2 seconds. And so, you know, there was just our teacher was wonderful and really took it seriously. And so I did West Side Story my freshman year, you know, auditioned for that, and like called my mom, like, I got it, you know. And there was just so much joy that came into my life through acting and through a theater. And so all 4 years I did shows and, you know, read Stanislavski and like, oh, just really got into it. And we did The Crucible my senior year. And
a classic. I feel like you're a theater girl and you haven't done The Crucible, then you haven't done theater.
Right. And the teacher we had was an actress. She was also a director, but she was an actress. And so she approached it really from that perspective. And I was like, I could do this show every day for 30 years. Like, I was Elizabeth Proctor. It was like, there's just so much there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was when I realized, like, wait, you could do theater in college, right? So I ended up going to Ball State University. I did 4 years of theater there. I think I did 10 shows. I understudied. I did costumes. Like, it was just, I loved it. I loved that experience of just getting to do this thing and trying to get better every time. And from there, I realized, like, okay, the life in the theater is, like, every night waiting in the wings. And I did a film class, and I had such an incredibly visceral experience doing something and then watching it back. It's like it logged in my brain of like, I did that. And that's really where the idea of moving to Los Angeles came for me. And I made that decision my senior year in college to move to LA, you know, kind of got my stuff ready for 9 months. And I moved in January 2005 and have been here ever since.
Wow. So you really just like went for it. Did you have any connections out here? Did you have family, anybody that you could lean on when you got here?
Great question. And thankfully I actually had a little bit. Yeah. So
good.
I had an uncle and his family and an aunt and her family that were nearby. And so I lived with them for like a month, and you know, it's like people that I could call. It was a real blessing that I had them, but I had a few people from college that had also moved out. So we were like this little bit of a community. And then I had gotten an internship through my college to work for Dino De Laurentiis company on Universal Studios lot. And I think I made, you know, $400 a week, which was like so much money. Like, I had never made that kind of money before. Right. excuse me. But yeah, so and my plan had been like, oh, I'm just going to like, you know, transfer my Starbucks or get a waitressing job or something. But I happened to have this year where every day I would drive and onto the studio lot and like see it happening right before my very eyes. And it was both incredible and amazing and also kind of overwhelming. One of my friends that worked for John Wells on Warner Brothers lot, we had this moment, we were like walking around the studios together and he was like, we've never been closer and we've never been more far away. It's like, we could see how much of a journey we still had ahead of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, and, you know, one of the things that I find so interesting, because I've been in this business since I was a kid, I never had that real experience as an adult, kind of
wondering
like, how I break into the inner circle. And not that I'm in the inner circle by any means, but, you know, I go on auditions, I do the work, I do the things.
It's
but
sort there of your is common sort experience. Of
a,
yeah.
Right. But there is a wall for people when they first get here that they have to break through. And I'm wondering how you processed it, not only in like the way that you need to process it as a business, but how you took care of yourself.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's such a beautiful question because you're absolutely right. Like, I think when I came, it was very much just like shotgun. My approach was like shotgun experience. My joke around the business is like, people are always like, acting is a business. It's a business. And we're like, yeah, it's a business. It's a business. What's a business? Like, what is it? Like, we don't even know what that means, right? And so I think, you know, it was like the slow building and just trying everything. I mean, I tried everything and felt like nothing worked for 10 years, you know, or worked, right? But that sense of like, okay, maybe I should take a class. I tried this class. Maybe I should do improv. I'll do improv. I'll do a play. I will like do this student film, never get the footage back, right? Just this, the exhaustion of sort of like running around and trying to do everything, and how it takes time to, you know, try and get an agent. Then you get an agent. They're not the right agent. You need to get another agent. Like then you, you know, my first year here, I dyed my hair red and it was like, oh, I'm the redhead now. And, or like, oh, that works. That doesn't work. Or I'm the goofy girl. Or I'm not the goofy girl. And I think I had a very much an essence that's similar to my essence now, where it was like kind of Midwestern mom in her like middle-aged Midwestern mom. And here I am 23, like, hi, I'm a Midwestern mom. So, but to come back to your question, I think it's so smart for you to say like, yes, there's the outside piece of, you know, it took me till 2013 to get an agent that sent me out enough that I started booking like non-union commercials. So it was like 8 years, right?
Yeah.
And I had done things, but like, didn't feel like the thing that I knew I thought I was capable of doing. And we're having a day job and trying to make money and, you know, navigating relationships and all these things, but the outside piece of like building slowly. And part of it is really for me looking back and being like, everything mattered.
Yeah.
All of those pieces that feel like I'm failing or this didn't become the thing I thought it was going to become. Like I did this play that was so waiting for Guffman. They were like, Pasadena Playhouse is going to come and do it. Like it's going to go there. And we're like, yeah. And like, you didn't. And we're like, yeah. You know, it's like, this is going to be the thing or this is going to be the thing. And instead really recognizing like, it's my life. It really does matter. So there's that outside piece of what am I building and letting it all count.
Yeah.
But you're so right. It's like, how did I, the going back and like taking care of myself piece that has been the thing that has gotten me to have the outside bigger wins that are like recognizable on my resume. And really there was a breakdown where I had, like I mentioned, I did that play. I wrote that play for myself and my, you know, my community. I booked some non-union commercials. I booked my first big Geico, my SAG commercial. Like I had a Geico campaign that was really fun and aired and people saw it. It was the first thing that people like saw.
Right.
And I got a manager, I joined SAG, I got a savings account, I got insurance. Like it was like, it's starting, it's happening. And then like nothing happened and it was so devastating. And really I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
I was just heartbroken, right? Like that's a 10, 11 years of this is this thing that I thought I was good at. I want to, you know, like where is the outside mirroring back to me? And through that is where I found the most healing, which is 12-step programs and life coaching and really doing the mindset work to slow down, to forgive myself for the expectations that I had. You know, one of the things I said was I couldn't see all that I had accomplished in the shadow of all that I hadn't. It's like, oof.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's a quote right there because it's so difficult to see how far you've come in this industry if you're not, if your name isn't like splashed across the pages, right?
Absolutely.
Because you think, oh my God, I'm not where she was at this time in her life, so therefore I have not made it yet. And it's like, no, you've made all of these strides. And I think for women, it's especially hard because of age. And the old, every year that you get older, you think, oh, well, it's never going to happen for me now. I'm no longer the ingenue. I'm no longer this. I'm no longer that. Yeah. And so we have to deal with this inner acceptance of one, actually aging because we are human. And two, realizing that everybody's on their own timeline. And what my success is looks so much different than somebody else's.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, we are in such a privileged position to use our career and our art as a means of doing this inner healing work.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe a dentist isn't going to be able to like pull in the loving for himself and like the self-forgiveness, like just because he's, you know, in a different field. But this really is what inspired me because I received such incredible, like, if I love me, if I commit to being on my side, no matter what could I create from there? And really reaching out and receiving that kind of support and choosing into mindset work of like, these are all thoughts that I'm having and they're creating my feelings, my actions, and my results. It was from receiving that I actually in 2020, right around when shutdown happened, I began offering this kind of coaching service to my community. And so I started Work of Art Coaching in 2020. And that has been such an incredible opportunity to really say to people, like, you are the work of art. What you are creating is valid and important. Yes, but it's this outside piece. But what's the inner experience that you're having being you?
Yeah.
How we relate to anything is how we relate to everything. And so, it was right around this period, right? Like it was 2015, 2016. That was like, everything is breaking. Everything is falling down. Like I just want to, you know, I think it was 2016. It was when I booked my first co-star after 11 years of work here. Right.
Wow. And
that 2016, 17, 18, that's where this inner work of taking care of myself, of forgiving myself for the expectations, of recognizing like, wow, all of these are judgments. These are thoughts that I'm having. And I am in charge of my thoughts and doing this thought work. It was in 2019 that I was like, okay, I'm going to create a goal for the year. And that's great reps. And 2020, I was like, I've never booked a co-star. I'm booking 5 of them. And the way that I'm going to do it is through this.
Right? Yeah.
And so that's where, and again, part of this, that there's wisdom in all different places. I got some more consulting help in 2018 from Audrey Moore, who Audrey Helps Actors was a wonderful podcast, a wonderful person.
Yes.
And, you know, she was like, I was trying to be maybe a little bit more glamorous. I was like, more blonde hair and I wanted to go up and be upscale. I'm like, I'm beautiful and glamorous. And she was like, Lynn, like, go down.
Yeah.
She was like, and it was like, I was a reckoning for myself. I was like, look, I'm from Indiana. Like, I'm not from a working class family, like a blue collar family, but like we're poor. Right. And so I had to like learn to love those tender kind of insecure pieces of myself to be like, well, what happens if I do niche myself as like single working class mom? Like my face goes down, like stopped highlighting my hair. It was like, take some really sad headshots. And that was 2019 of like building this. Okay, this is not what I wished the kind of parts that I would play, but they're still really interesting roles and they feel really right. And in 2020, right in 2019, I got pinned for my first guest star, which was single working class mom. 2020, booked my first guest star, single working class mom. I auditioned for Daisy Jones, single working class mom, right? Like right around the same time as when I auditioned for Impeachment, and it was like middle management, you know,
right,
a secretary woman. Like it's not single working class mom, but it's like the professional version of that.
Over
like,
there. Right.
Yeah.
It's still
right?
Like, same, like niche.
Right. And my my makeup artist for the headshot shoot that we did literally texted me when she saw the rookie. She was like, we did it. Like, and in the wardrobe fitting, it was like, yeah, everything we tried on, we'd be like, oh, that's really sad. Oh, that's even more sad. Like the sadder, the better.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick commercial break and then we'll be right back.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
And back to the show. I mean, this brings up like a really, really interesting point, and something that we've been talking about a lot on the show lately is how you bring yourself into your work. And then also just embracing yourself to be in that work, right? And not saying, like you said, oh, I have these expectations of being this glamorous, you know, what Jennifer Lawrence. It's like, no, be you, because you is what's going to sell.
And there's work there, right?
Like, right. There's always something for you. And it's out there as long as you do the work to embrace who you are.
Oh, that's so good. But there is work out there, and then there's work in here. Right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Just it's also, it's interesting how it's sort of when we slow down to allow ourselves to be who we are with our frailty, with our fault, like being willing to be seen in that vulnerable way. Like, I'll say one of my biggest things, and one of the reasons I think it took me so long to really start working, is the translation between theater to film.
Yeah, there's a big difference there.
It's a huge difference. And it feels so different. Like when we're really doing excellent camera work, it almost feels like we're not doing anything.
Right.
And like if you come from theater, you're like, no, I'm supposed to be doing a something.
Let me speak more loudly, please.
Totally. I mean, it just doesn't even feel right. And so it took so much courage to start self-taping and start practicing self-taping, even when I didn't have an audition, to like put up the lights, put up the camera. And for me, it was about making that self-tape space sacred, like capital S sacred, and letting all those like feelings come up. Like, I love the Ira Glass quote where he talks about like, we get into this because we have excellent taste. But when we start working, like our technique is not as good as our taste. Like, we have the talent and the potential.
Yeah.
But like, what we're doing is going to be disappointing to us. But the only way to get to like our taste level is to be willing to do this bad work over and over. And there were absolutely times when I was like, oh, no, I'm way better than what I did, but I'm not going to do what I'm not going to do it to get better at it. Right. I was just avoiding, seeing myself back. But once, like, for young actors, like, one of the biggest things I would say is like, pull sides, get a background, get your camera, even if it's your phone, start taping things. And even to this day, one of my biggest tools is like, I'll do a rough draft of my audition, like no makeup, no hair, nothing. Like, I'll read the other lines and then do my lines, you know, just getting myself on tape and watching it back. It helps me learn the scene. It helps me see what's working and what's not working, because so often we feel like, oh, that worked. And then we watch it back and we're like,
and you're like, oh, that did not work. Didn't. Never mind.
It didn't. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a casting director recently, well, not recently, a couple of years ago now, but it feels recently because we've been in these
pandemic times.
Yeah. These pandemic years have completely messed with my head.
Yeah.
But they told me to, when I have an audition that I have to self-tape, set a time for it to self-tape, like I was going into an audition, and to then put that, not necessarily pressure, but that excitement on it.
That's
so
it.
so that your like energy levels are up, because they said, you know, with self-tapes, what's been interesting for them is to see how energy levels have gone down. And it's true, because it's like, if you're just in your room filming your audition, it's like, there's nothing too exciting about it, right? But if you put a time on it and you say, I only have 30 minutes to do this, and I need to do it, and I need to be prepared, and I need to be ready. It's like, you've brought this excitement back into it, where you have these, you know, again, not pressure, but this willingness
good
to say,
pressure.
Yeah, good here's pressure. Good things that I need to do now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really great advice. Jack Plotnick has a free book online called New Thoughts for Actors. But he talks about that excitement. The nervousness and excitement are the same exact charge in us.
Yeah.
And he's like, you need that. Like, he talks about it, that excitement or that nervousness is like plugging into your power source. Right. And so taking it seriously, I think it's both things. Like, I do love the idea of like, don't, I think we're the meanest casting directors in town to ourselves.
Yes. 100%.
I would say things to myself that I would never say to another human. And I know no casting director would ever say, let alone think. Right. And so first off, it's a matter of like working, making sure your inner critic is working for you, right? Like, that's something I work with my clients a lot of, like, there's this voice inside that is being mean because it loves you so much.
Yes. Like,
how do we translate it
because
that way?
You want it to, you want to succeed so much.
Right. Right. And so it's part, but also taking that down and being like, something that I love the idea of like doing it for a time frame. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Some actors are like, I only give myself 3 takes. Like, sure, but I give myself as much rough draft as I want, and then go ahead and give yourself those 3 takes so that you're not just like, I don't know, I'm hoping I'm finding it. I hope it's there.
It's still putting in like all of the work for the preparation, everything that you would normally do before you go into an audition room.
Yes, yes. Something I'll do sometimes, a couple things. One is I'll sit outside my bedroom in like a chair. I don't do this every time.
Oh, like you're in a waiting room?
And like,
game changing.
I can have, I'll either walk in my own, or I'll have my reader be like, Lynn, and I'll walk in. That is incredibly helpful. That is incredibly helpful when you get to that place where you're like trying to do it right. And you're like, take seven, break the energy, move out of your space, kind of do a little shimmy shake. And then imagine yourself walking in, because that's that charge. Like, here we go. Because we're performers, we're ready to perform. That's one thing. The other thing that is so helpful is sometimes I really like the idea that like you did book the job. You booked it today.
Yep.
Like, you have this audition. It's yours. Go do with it as you will. So something that could be helpful in your just before, like, you know, you roll camera, whatever, is really imagining yourself on set and being like, okay, the lighting people are moving around. I'm like chatting over here. Like, I have my moment. Like, okay, where's the camera? Like, and then being like, all right, and settle and rolling and action. And then step into the audition, right? Because it just, again, it charges you up. How do you create a space that is safe and fun and on without being on?
It's so, my acting teacher when I was a kid taught me that. She always told me to go into it like I already had it so that I would get rid of anything that was like within me that made me self-doubt. And it worked. It always worked. Every time I would step in, I'd be like, well, it doesn't matter because I already booked it. It doesn't matter if I do book it at the end of the day. It's the fact that I was there and I was present and I didn't have some sort of weird fear attached to it.
Yeah. That's something I work with my clients so much, is like really deconstructing, like, well, what is the booking? What does it mean? And what are we thinking we're going to feel when we get that booking? And what are we going to be thinking about ourselves, right? And like, how do we give that to ourselves even in the process and even the journey? Because so often when we do that first, the booking comes in a much more aligned way. And we're not like making it into this idol of like, then I'll be a real actor.
Yeah, then I'll be able to do this thing that I've always wanted to do. Or then I'll be able to go on a vacation, whatever it is.
Right. Do it now. Do it now.
I could spend hours talking about this stuff with you. Wow.
Yeah.
Well said. But on the show, we like to share audition stories.
Oh, good.
So those can be, wow, that's my very loud husky in the background making a lot of noise. they can be, you know, the one that got away, something funny that happened in a room, anything that you would like to share with the listeners.
You know, honestly, what's coming forward is I really think that I would love to share my Daisy Jones story.
Yes.
This is a win. Like, well, I'll do the losses, which is, I believed in pratfalls early on in my career. And, multiple times I would actually do the pratfall in the audition. one time I literally hurt my wrist. So it's still to this day, not the same wrist that I had before because I landed so wrong. And then the other one was one of my very first TV auditions. I had to do a prep, or I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to do this fall. And I was in somebody's office. She literally, in the middle of my audition, I fall down. She's, I spent the rest of my, the casting director spent the rest of my audition like, okay, thank you for coming in. Never have auditioned for her ever again.
Oh my gosh.
So maybe don't actually fall down. You know, the liability, she was just like, her insurance policy just went out the roof. So
you blew her brain.
I don't do it. Don't fall down. Don't hurt yourself. Don't hurt your relationship with the casting director. But I would really like to share the Daisy Jones experience.
Yes, just
because
please.
It was so special. A couple things that really supported me in this. When I got the audition, there's sometimes this temptation to be like, okay, cool, it's not due till Friday. I'm just, I'm a little nervous about it. I'm gonna like put it off. That one came in and I was like, I am doing this today.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the tape to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, new in my mind, I was like, this is my wheelhouse. I had been really holding this thought. I'm booking 5 guest stars this year. I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know when, I don't know how. But it was like, no, this is my time, right? I was holding myself and thinking the thoughts like, no, I deserve to be here, right? This is my calling. I'm here. Like, holding that and getting this audition that was like single working class mom, period, all these things. I was like, I'm doing this today. I'm doing this now. There were a couple scenes where I didn't have to interact with anyone else. And it was such a blessing. And I would almost encourage people to like, imagine what that scene might be, because it just grounded me, because I didn't have a reader in the room. It was just me and my camera. And I had been spending a few years like allowing the camera to see me, getting comfortable with that little guy looking at you, right? And so I just really played crafting these moments as if it was my little film that I was making. And then, you know, I had called my dad that day because there was something about Vietnam. And I was like, tell me, what was that like? Like, the draft, right? Like, I listened to some music from the era, right? I was just trying to sink into the reality of it.
Yeah.
And so I felt so good about my tapes, and I actually just found them on my Actors Access and watched them back. And I was like, good job, girl.
You
I like
those.
Post
those.
I'm going to once the thing airs, once it airs.
Yay.
But really crafting the costume without being too much, the hair without being too much, like making it make sense to me. And so I did that and sent that in. I got called back. They wanted new scenes. They wanted more scenes. So they invited me to film two new scenes, which was a huge win. If that's as far as it had gone, it would have been a huge win. So I did the same process with that, just sort of like really made it my own. I could tell that a little time had changed. So I like did my hair a little bit different. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit more upscale than it had been. Then I get the call that they want me to come in to audition for producers on Paramount Live. And this was my first like real studio, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the time. And so really taking care of myself, I got there very early. I ended up walking around. There was like a Lucy, I think it was the Lucy bungalow. So there's this like little courtyard. I did a grounding for myself. It was like, you know, I love me. One of my mantras is I am committed to loving myself through my journey of growth, healing, and transformation. It's like, I'm going to love me no matter what happens, no matter what the result is. And I remember, really also holding like, I'm a collaborator. We're equals. Which yes. It's here.
Yeah, it's that here, it's right? All in your head. You have to make that decision of saying, they need me as much as yes. I need them.
Yes, absolutely. And so, I come into this large space and coming from theater, we so rarely have this opportunity to be like in a larger space or performing in front of people. But there was like a table of people back there and then the casting directors. And you could just tell that the casting directors were like, there's something that happens like moving from non-union commercials to union commercials to TV, like commercial casting and TV casting directors are very different. They have different pressures, yes. But there was still yes. Like a welcome, Lynn. And I was like, hi, okay. You know, they're so warm and inviting. And so we come in. At the time, Nikki Caro was the director and she did the Disney Mulan. And because of quarantine and she didn't end up directing James Ponsoldt and Inzinga Stewart took over. And so I was auditioning for Nikki and she was giving direction. So we did the audition scenes that I had. I made sure that I brought my paper, but I put it off to the side because I was like, I knew I was ready and I wanted to just share like, this is important. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Right. So just taking it, having it and being like, nope, down. We did the first scene. She was great. We did the next scene. They were like, great. We move on to this very emotional scene, which may or may not make it into the pilot, which is part of this is like this big, beautiful emotional scene. It's possible that it actually got cut. So that's just part of it. But we move into this big emotional scene where the boys are leaving. And I do it once. She goes, great. Okay. So I can only imagine how angry she would be at them for leaving her. And I was like, oh, interesting note. I go and do it again. She goes, she's never mean to her children. And I was like, angry, not mean. Like, okay, okay.
Yeah.
I do it one more time. And I knew that I didn't quite get it. And so we cut and I said, that wasn't it, was it? And she's like, yeah, no, it wasn't quite it. And it was for me holding that space of like, we're collaborating. And like, I know that what I just did wasn't it. Mm-hmm. And she gave me another note, but inside I sort of was like, okay, there's more work for me to do to really understand the fullness of this. And I can't go be like, let me have 20 minutes to do their backstory or whatever. I said to myself in that moment, I was like, I'm probably not going to get her note. But what I can do is look at my reader and care. And so I heard the note and I'm like, yes, yes. But whatever it was, I was like, I'm not going to do this right. I just need to see what happens, charge in. And that was Risa Brandon Garcia was like, if you're really locked in to your reader, like that's where the magic can happen, right? So I just locked in and just was, I don't even know what I was doing. I was just like caring about this person, this actual reader, this actual person in front of me. And when we cut, I see the camera operator go like this.
Oh.
And Nikki Caro goes, great. All right, let's do the next scene. And it was in that moment that I was like, I think I got it right. Like, I think I allowed myself to make mistakes, to not do it perfectly, but to call out like, I'm working on this one. Let's keep working this one. Mm-hmm. And that allowed me to be like, okay, I left it all there, you know? And actually, I think she was like, okay, great, that's enough. And I was like, oh, do we want to do the other scene? And she was like, oh, there's another scene? Sure. And so we did the last scene. And, you know, they said, thanks. And as I was leaving the set, Don't Stop Believing is like one of my very favorite songs. And it was like blasting It was like blasting. And I was like,
the universe was like, good job in there.
And the other little universe thing is I really believe in calling in audition, like calling in the winds and calling the bookings, like physically pulling them into your spiritual space. As I was driving home on Cahuenga, I saw the poster for Mulan and I was like,
oh my goodness.
And that night my agent called and she was like, you're pinned. And then the booking came through. So, I mean, really such a blessing. And one of my friends was like, Lynn, you booked a pilot. You did it, right? Like,
big.
Yeah.
Big news.
So special to have had that sense of collaboration. That's something I really feel like I bring with me. You know, and now with self-tapes, we don't have that sense of who's coming back, but believing like, how do I collaborate with myself? How do I collaborate with my wee audition reader? How do I collaborate with my husband who has called in to me to be my reader? But like really believing in that collaboration piece and holding it on the inside. So I hope that's encouraging.
That's, yeah, I love that story. I love that you took your space, you know, you claimed your space.
Yep.
You said, I am here to show my craft, to work my craft, and you're going to do it with me. And I'm going to call myself out and you're going to call me out and I'll call you out. It's fine.
That's right. It's
right. I think we can get, saying, I'm going to do it.
We can get so blinded by the fanciness.
Yes.
Especially I'm come from Indiana, right? Like Hollywood is like, sorry, my headphones just dropped.
We got too excited.
Yeah, I got too excited, you know, but it really, really is, it's right sizing. We're all people who love stories.
Mm-hmm.
And we deserve to be here.
I love that. Again, like I said earlier, I could literally spend hours talking to you, but for now, how can people follow you on social media to keep up with all of your awesomeness and talk to you about your coaching if they want to be coached by you?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely reach out. Creating support for myself has been one of the biggest pro moves I've ever done. And so I'm open to talking to anyone. So Lynn Downey Braswell is my Instagram. So Lynn Downey Braswell. So usually if you find Lynn Downey, Braswell will come up. And then work.of.art.coaching on Instagram, or you can email me at theworkofartcoaching@gmail.com.
Amazing. I hope that many people email you because you are a wealth of knowledge and so inspirational. It's been so fun sharing this space with you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Jillian, it's so inspiring what you're doing and the way that you're investing in your community and just helping people up level. It says so much about you, that your commitment to this and just your openness. So I'm so grateful to be here and I'm wishing you all of your heart's desires.
Thanks again to Lynn for coming on the show and spending some time with me. I hope you all feel inspired and excited and great about your careers after listening to this. I know that it was a very meaningful conversation for Lynn and I, and we super connected, and I hope that you all feel fantastic. Make sure to check out Daisy Jones and the Six on Amazon Prime right now. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.